there's sneaky plastic. There's like overt plastic, which is, you know, here's a yogurt container, and then there's sneaky plastic. That's really hard. Like, what was one of the hardest ones that you caught?
Chewing gum.
Oh.
Not that I'm a big gum chewer, but I
am.
I think a lot of people don't.
Oh no. Tell me what it is. What is it?
Sorry, what kind of gum do you chew?
Well, I like extra, or that's probably the worst, isn't it?
It's plastic.
Like the gum itself is plastic?
Yeah.
What? That's horrible. Yeah. I'm chewing plastic.
You are.
Oh no.
My husband is addicted to gum. He chews on plastic all the time.
Oh my God. That's so sad. I was just thinking about the packaging and I was like, but it's paper and like foil. I've looked. No.
No, the gum itself is plastic. So here's the thing. On chewing gum, if you look at the ingredients, there's something called gum base. Okay, gum base is like fragrance or dye, or it's one of those things where the manufacturer doesn't have to say what it actually is.
Oh.
And gum base can be made out of lots of different things. In the old days, it was made out of the sap from a tree. But today, it's generally made out of plastic. And there are only a few chewing gum companies that are making gum base with 100% natural.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Sacred Rage Podcast. I'm your host, Erica Prather, and today, oh boy, we are going to swim in plastic. We'll uncover how the plastic packaging around your whole food salad contributes to the pollution in someone's backyard who doesn't have as many resources as you do, and more. I spoke with Beth Terry, who runs a website called myplasticfreelife.com. She's also written a book called Plastic Free: How I Kicked the Plastic Habit and How You Can Too. All of this stemming from a crusade that started in 2007. Beth was working as an accountant at the time, and as I call it, went down the hole with how much plastic she was buying, consuming, how it was affecting her life, her health, and the planet. And she just couldn't help but share the knowledge and resources along the way. As it turns out, she's not only an incredible resource on plastic and how to get it out of your life, she's a really wise, down-to-earth soul. And the whole getting rid of plastic thing is just an extension of a slower, intentionally paced life. Today, we'll follow the cycle of plastic from birth to death, see where it goes and how and what you can do in episode 6 of Sacred Rage, Our Plastic Planet. I just found you when I was doing a Google search because, well, it's probably how a lot of people find you. Like, just, huh? I was looking for ways to get rid of more plastic in my life. For me, it's been kind of like a gradual process. Like, I'm sure we'll get to like advice you have for people. But for me, it wasn't like, oh, tomorrow I'm going off plastic. It's just been kind of this slow transition. Like, oh, I'm noticing it in, you know, food products, or now I'm going to try to shop in the bulk section, or how do I get cheese, or all these things. And just, I was like, I know people have done this before, so here's this woman who's done it all. But I'm really interested to know also just, you know, about your journey. I mean, how does one, like, what was the kind of catalyst? Was there an eye-opening event for you that, you know, you're working as an accountant and one day XYZ happens, and then this becomes your crusade?
So I sort of considered myself an environmentalist. You know, back in the 80s, in the late 80s, I worked for an environmental organization, Clean Water Action. And that was when I was fresh out of college. And it only lasted a couple, like a year and a half, I think. And then I moved on to other things. I considered myself an environmentalist, and I would go to environmental films, you know, like an Inconvenient Truth and things like that. But it didn't really translate into changes in my personal life. You know, I mean, I ate microwavable meals and energy bars and everything packaged and didn't really think about where things came from and where they were going to go at the end of their lives. And then in 2007, I was at home recovering from surgery. I'd had a hysterectomy, actually. And I was browsing the internet and I stumbled across an article about ocean plastic pollution. And at that time, 11 years ago, this was brand new to me. I hadn't heard of this before. And I saw a photo of a dead albatross chick with its body full of plastic. And it had starved. Its mother had gone out looking for food and mistaken plastic for food and fed it to the chick. And the chick had died with its stomach full of plastic. And I think I was already sort of grieving. And I think I was having this maternal instinct that hadn't even known was there. And it just kicked in. And I just felt so protective of this bird. And as I continued reading this article, I learned that it's not just birds and other animals eating plastic, but when we feed our kids from containers and packaging made with plastic, those chemicals are leaching into the food and into our babies. So we're just like those albatrosses. Honestly, that was the first time that it really hit me. Oh, my choices, the things I buy and the things I use actually do make a difference, because I could look in that bird and I could see bottle caps and just everyday things that I was using. And I just thought, I wonder if it's even possible to live without plastic or to live without acquiring any new plastic. And I just thought, I'm going to try and see how easy or hard it is. And I also decided that I was going to collect all my plastic waste just to see what my personal plastic footprint was. And because I'm an accountant, I created a spreadsheet and I would count all the plastic each week and weigh it.
Wow.
I made a website and I would list it on there. I haven't done that since I think 2011 or 2012, because I sort of got it, right? I don't need to still tally all my plastic.
Right.
But it was really cool to see year after year the amount going down. And like you, I didn't try to get rid of all plastic all at once, because I thought that's just going to be a recipe for failure and disappointment in myself. I just was using up the stuff that I had in the house and trying to replace it with something plastic free if I could. And within 6 months, I had gotten it way down. I mean, there was still a lot. Oh, one thing that took me forever was realizing that not all wine corks are actually cork.
Oh, really? You know? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Do you drink wine?
Yeah. So what is it, like a plasticky fake out cork?
Yeah. It's a plastic fake out. So the next time once you notice it, then it becomes really obvious.
I think now that we're talking about it, I know what you mean. It's like, it looks like it. It's like the same color and stuff, but it doesn't kind of fall apart the way that cork does.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. It's totally. Very plasticky. And then once you realize it, then you know every time you pull out a cork out of a wine bottle, you'll notice if it's real or not.
And that ties into this other conversation where I think some people feel like to eliminate plastic or to become more eco-conscious, it's like this, I don't know, status symbol or conversation of privilege. And I think in some ways it is, but in some ways it's not, because sometimes you're actually saving money by not buying packaged products or buying things in bulk and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Buying whole fresh food instead of processed food is a lot, oftentimes less expensive. And also just doing away with certain categories of products, you know, like bottled water and bottled drinks. That's another great way to save money. And another thing is just not buying new stuff, you know? I mean, one of the ways that I reduce the amount of new plastic I consume is by avoiding buying new stuff in the first place and shopping secondhand and asking myself, are these things I really need in the first place, whatever it happens to be? And that's the primary way that I've saved money. And I might spend more on certain things, and I might spend more up front too, which I totally recognize that not everyone has the cash flow to do that. But if you do, you know, buying a few really good stainless steel containers, those things last forever.
Right.
Right. And so in the long run, you save money,
yep.
but there sometimes might be an investment up front. But even if you don't have those kind of funds, there are things that you can do, you know, storing things in reused glass jars, for example. I have jars in my refrigerator, in my freezer, in my cupboards. I just love glass jars.
Yeah, me too. I mean, and that's what we do too. Like, you know, you've got a jar of salsa, clean it out, and then make your own vegetable broth and put it in that jar.
Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's the interesting thing where it gets super nuanced. I feel like it starts like, you know, I'm just going to bring my own bags to the store, and that's kind of like everybody's first step, I think. And and then you go down the line where, you know, I mean,
and you're like, oh, I'm filling up my canvas bag with all this plastic packaging and plastic bags. And especially the thing that that always gets me is when I go to the store and I see people with their canvas bags, filling it up with their produce that they've put in produce bags. And every single piece of produce is in a separate bag. And I'm just like, those things don't even need bags.
Right,
You're going to wash it when you get – how many hands have already touched it, first of all, right?
Yep, yep.
And then you're going to go home and you're going to wash it, hopefully, anyway.
Right.
So why put it in a plastic bag just to go from the store to your house?
Right. And I've even seen, I just like the next one for me is like I moving away from that and into the bulk section where I've just been reusing those flimsy plastic bags that are, you know, for the bulk section, but they obviously rip after like the fourth or fifth time. So seeing, I like just ordering these like, they're not canvas, but they're a material similar to that that you can take into the bulk section with like a drawstring that closes it. And it even has a tear like label on it. And it's just like, it's not that hard. Like really.
It's not. You just have to, the thing that's hard is getting into the habit of having your bags with you, right?
Right. But I think that that's, but even then that's, and I've seen people battle with that, but it's like, but you leave the house with your phone, keys, and wallet, and your purse or whatever. And so it's this exact same thing. And some people maybe carry a diaper bag also, or they're carrying a camera case or whatever it is. It's just, I mean, it really doesn't, take a whole lot, you know, the King Supers.
But just get in the habit of putting the bag back where you'll have it when you go to the store.
Right.
I think that's the key thing. Don't. Yep. Think, oh, I'll just do this later because that's how you forget.
Totally.
That's how I do anyway.
What are other ways that people, is there anything else since we're on the subject of gum, other plastics that we're eating that we don't know? Because it kind of didn't enter my mind until we're talking about this. But like, are there foods you avoid because they actually have plastic in them? Or
well, there are medications. Some medications have plastic in the capsule. Different pills do. So just, you know, stay well. Uh-huh. So you don't have to take medicine.
Right, right. Because I know that we are, obviously we're consuming it in different ways. And that was a big whole thing about, you know, BPA mimicking estrogen in the body and becoming this cancer-causing agent. And so it's like we are definitely consuming it. Like every person has microplastics in their body. In one form or another.
And they've found plastic in sea salt.
Wow.
They're finding plastic in fish that people eat,
mm-hmm.
microplastics. And what impact that's having on human health, they don't know yet. That's something to be studied. But they are finding microplastics in the fish that people eat. And plastic is in everything now. It just is so ubiquitous because it breaks down into teeny tiny little pieces, you know, and it gets into everything and it never goes away. That's the thing. Like it breaks down into tiny little fragments. That's what we mean by microplastics, but it's still there and it's still plastic.
Right. And that's something that I became aware of. Even some companies like Patagonia, they admitted, they did the research and found that their fleece, which they make out of recycled materials, which is awesome, but they acknowledge that, yes, you know, these fleece, every time you wash it, are putting microplastics out through your washing machine, back into the water system, eventually in the ocean, in your tea, and whatever. So, like, what about clothing items for you? Are there things that you got rid of, or like, if you did you throw it away, or like, how do you?
Well, when you... the thing is, I did. There were a lot of clothing items that I had that were synthetic that I gave to Goodwill before I even knew about the microplastic fabric issue. And in fact, somebody just left a comment on my website today or yesterday, saying, "What do you do with these things? Because if you give them away, somebody else is just going to wear them, and they're gonna send microfibers through the laundry." When you wear clothing that is polyester, acrylic, spandex, lycra, any of those kind of materials, polar fleece, when you put them in the laundry, they shed. Polar fleece sheds the most because it's fuzzy, you know, but any kind of polyester, any kind of synthetic material is going to shed. And washing machines don't have filters that can catch these teeny tiny fibers because they're so small. They're too small for washing machine filters, and they're too small for water treatment systems to catch also. So they make their way into our waterways and out into the ocean, and they're finding microfibers on beaches, and also mixed in with the zooplankton, which is the bottom of the food chain in the ocean, so that fish eat it, and then bigger fish eat those fish, and bigger fish eat those fish, and that's how it makes its way. These fibers make their way up into the food chain. And the Story of Stuff project has been working to get manufacturers to come up with solutions, manufacturers of synthetic clothing, you know, and then the clothing manufacturers would say, well, the washing machine manufacturers need to come up with a way to catch that stuff because nobody wants to take responsibility. There are several things that consumers can buy to help reduce the shedding. So there's one that I tested called Guppy Friend, which is a bag, and you put all your synthetics and your fleeces into this Guppy Friend bag and wash it in the washing machine, and the bag catches the fibers. But it's not an optimal solution. I mean, because then you end up with your stuff in this bag that has trapped the fibers with the clothes, and then you take the clothes out and they kind of... And then you have to take the fibers out and throw them in the trash.
Right.
I don't know. It's just not the best. We need to stop making clothes from these materials, I think.
Yeah. And I think that this just hits on, it's kind of like there's this micro level, literally micro level, which we're discussing right now, which is a microplastic. You can't see it. You can't catch it. And then there's this macro level conversation, which is, the reason we have so many plastics and everything from in our food or, you know, containing our food to our clothing is it's fast and cheap and just kind of this, I don't know, like unconscious thing. It's like fast fashion, right? Because it used to be things made out of like actual materials, like organic things like wool or something. Whereas, you know, now things are cheaper, but it's like switching this larger mindset. Like, yes, that shirt at Forever 21 is $7, but it's made out of toxic crap. So, like,
yeah,
and that's why it's cheap, you know?
So the whole idea of clothing being disposable is a problematic idea to begin with, right? I mean, we need to be purchasing things that will last.
Right.
And they might cost more to purchase. This is what I was saying before about upfront costs, but they'll last a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And they won't be shedding. So there, you know, I have found leggings, for example, that are 100% organic cotton. You know, when you wear spandex, it stretches and then it snaps back. So as you go through your day, it doesn't get baggy on you. It still stays just as clingy as when you first put it on in the morning, right? When you wear 100% cotton, it stretches, but it doesn't necessarily snap back.
Right.
So the leggings by the end of the day can look a little wrinkly and a little bit baggier than when you first put them on. And to me, it's more important to me to be kind to the planet and to avoid plastics than to worry about if my leggings are completely conforming to my legs, you know?
Right, right.
But that's a personal choice, and it's a matter of setting priorities over what's important.
Yeah, it's part of this like greater thing of like examining your day from start to finish, your body head to toe, you know, from your shampoo to whatever, and seeing yeah. where it is, and then and what, like you said, I think it is a personal choice of, and I'm interested to know too what you think. There was an interesting article that Bloomberg published, and that was called like "Plastic Straws Are Not the Problem." How these little personal changes, you know, don't make mm-hmm. a dent in the fishing industry, which is like they're like the largest whatever, you know, offender in this, that they're nuts, they let them go a lot of time, or they just fall off or whatever, and that these are the things that are causing like 50% of the ocean's plastic. And so yeah. I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, well, I've done a lot of thinking about that. And first of all, I want to say that even though my focus is on personal changes that individuals can make in their lives, I don't think that it's enough. I think it's really, really important, and I'll tell you why, but I don't think that individuals changing what they buy in the grocery store or, you know, in their personal lives is going to fix the overall problem because it's so huge. But it's part of the problem, and it's a part that we have control of, and it's a part that we can fix. There are so many different components to this problem, and they all have to be addressed. And this is just one of the things that has to be addressed. And, you know, it's, yes, straws are small, and they're a small part of the problem, but there's something that's so easy to fix.
Right.
You know, one, I mean, you can grab the low hanging fruit first. You don't have to go for the hardest thing right away. Okay. But all that said, yeah, straws are not the biggest part of the problem, but they are part of the problem, and they're something that we can do something about. And they are another way to raise awareness.
Yeah. And so on that note, I guess, like, because that kind of raises another issue, which is like, well then, and, you know, how do I deal with that? If I want to, like, you know, support a more sustainable fishing industry or like attack the bigger, more political problem, do you mm-hmm. have any advice on that end aside from like personal, you know, purchases and avoidances?
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, so for example, with the straw thing, there is a movement to get restaurants to stop giving out straws, and you could Google the last straw, or and there are also, you'll find other organizations doing things around straws. Same thing with plastic bags, same thing with styrofoam, same thing with cups. You know, there's campaigns, and these are things that you can get involved in, and normally they'll have things that you can do, like write a letter to this person or sign this, or speak up when you go to a restaurant, or, you know, different things like that. There's plenty of things that people can do. Mm-hmm. If you go to the Story of Stuff website, that's a really good resource for actions that you can take. And also if you go to the Break Free from Plastic website, those are focused on community actions.
Cool.
Rather than simply consumer choices.
It just, it really is. I mean, I saw the other day, Yvonne Chouinard said, living an examined life is a pain in the ass. And really, that's really what this conversation is about in a large way, is like, now I have to think about something that sucks. Now I have to feel guilty. Now I have to like enter this other realm that can be really unpleasant, really, you know, demands self-reflection and is counter to a consumerist society. I mean, that,
but
yeah,
yes, all of that. And in the end, at the end of the day, it's not, it doesn't suck, and it doesn't, and it leads you to real connection, feeling a real connection to the planet. It can, if you can get past the guilty feelings and the anger and the sadness and the irritation with other people who aren't living up to what you think they should be. You know, you have to feel all those things first, of course. But if you can work through those, you get to a place where You just do it because you love the planet and you love other people and you just want to do the right thing. And what happens is some of the things that you thought were so important, getting here faster, so I need these convenience things, it forces you to slow down a little bit and it forces you to, I think, appreciate simpler. This sounds so corny, but it's actually true. I mean, it helps you appreciate really simple things in your life when you minimize all the stuff that you're consuming, all the stuff that you're buying, all the stuff that you think you need. It really gives you space in your life for what matters and to even realize what matters. So yeah, it's a pain in the ass at first. It's also fun. I mean, you can look at it as just a fun challenge. As long as you don't spend all your time beating yourself up when you fall short of where you think you should be. Because, you know, I mean, the system isn't set up for people to succeed at living without plastic. But just, you know, just look at it as a game, as a challenge, as something fun to try.
It is a game, and it is fun. I like, the first time I took my container to the deli, I was like, how's this going to go? I don't know. Is she going to look at me weird? Like, what's going to happen? And
right. She
just didn't say anything. She was just like, because I knew, like, I'd worked in a lab. I was like, I know they can tear this on the scale. I've seen the scale. And she just did it. And then the lady at the checkout was like, oh, I was like, yeah, I'm just trying to reduce my plastic. And she's like, that's cool. Like, I've never seen this before, but okay. And so it was so, like, not a big deal. No one was like, I can't do this. Like, it wasn't a big deal, you know?
Yeah. I think people often are afraid to speak up because they're worried about what other people will think. You know, I mean, I recognize that that's a hard thing, being concerned about what other people will think. But, you know, the worse than the thing that other people think is that you are so concerned about what other people think.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah. And one other thing I wanted, I mean, I know you go over it in detail on your website, but I loved your reasons just for this whole endeavor. And you were speaking to the fossil fuel industry and stuff like that. And so maybe you could speak to that a little bit. How are fossil fuels, like, let's say that you are, you know, you love recreating on America's public lands and it makes you sad that you see oil and gas development next to a national park. How is decreasing your plastic consumption directly tied to something like that?
Yeah, well, plastics are made from fossil fuels. So originally, they were made from coal, and then they switched to petroleum. It's wherever they can get a really rich source of carbon. And now more recently, with the increase in fracking in the United States, here in the U.S., most plastic is actually made from natural gas. And the boom in fracking is driving the plastics industry in this country because natural gas is cheaper than petroleum.
Right.
And so when you're supporting the petroleum industry, you're also supporting the plastics industry. And something that people maybe miss sometimes is, you know, they'll ask me, well, what plastics are safe to use? You know, what plastics are less likely to leach chemicals into, toxic chemicals, because everything is made from chemicals, but, you know, endocrine disrupting chemicals into my food or water. And I say, well, there are certain plastics that are more likely to leach than others. But the other thing you have to think about is in the communities where those plastics are produced, the people that live in those communities and the workers in those factories are subjected to air pollution, mm-hmm. water pollution. They're subjected to all kinds of chemicals on a daily basis. And there are higher rates of cancers and rare cancers that you don't find in other parts of the country, in places like Texas and Louisiana, where the petrochemical industry is the biggest. And so, you know, when you're choosing things made out of plastic, you're supporting an industry that is producing pollution here in the United States. You're not only harming those communities, which, you know, to me is enough, that, you know, air pollution doesn't have any borders. It, you know, we in California, we get subjected to air pollution from China in a matter of a couple days, I think. When you're making a decision on what to purchase, consider the energy used to create it and the pollution that is being produced by creating it, and whether you're contributing to the pollution in the world in that way. So it's, and then at the end of the product's life, there's pollution on the other end as well. When things go to landfills, you know, landfills can leach, things go to incinerators, and incinerators give off toxic emissions. But also, I think a lot of people think, well, this is recyclable. This container is recyclable, so that makes it okay. It has a little triangle on it, so that makes it okay. But most of our plastic recycling in the United States gets shipped overseas. Now, for years, it was shipped to China, and then there were exposés done showing the toxic conditions of plastic recycling in China, where plastics were burned and melted down, and there were no environmental protections for the people who were doing the work, and whole towns were polluted by so-called plastic recycling. China has cracked down. They're not taking a lot of our recycling, our plastic recycling anymore, because yep. they were inundated with it. But it just means that we're looking for other developing countries to send it to. And, you know, my hope is that it helps us, gives us an incentive to develop our recycling infrastructure here in the United States. But even more than that, my hope is that it encourages companies to produce less of the stuff in the first place, because we have nowhere to send it. You know, a lot of times you put something now in your recycle bin and it's just a long way around to the landfill, ultimately, if there's no market for it, if there's no place to ship it off to.
Right. I love that you brought that up. And I was going to ask you to speak to that, because I don't think most people know that recycling should be an absolute last resort, because unfortunately it does get shipped overseas. And I think that you just hit on an intersection that I really enjoy exploring, which is that social justice and environmental justice are so intrinsically linked, and that it's these fracking sites that this is happening, those people have cancer, the incinerators at the end of this life, oftentimes those are placed in low income neighborhoods. And so I think that it really does become, if people want to talk about, you know, this issue of privilege, and it's like you're privileged to be able to partake in this. Well, yeah, you are. If you can think about it in that way, then you should be doing something about it, because, I mean, pretty much anybody that's listening to this is privileged enough to take those steps. And it doesn't have to be a horrible burden, because it does have such a far-reaching effect beyond just microplastics in your body.
It's all interconnected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you care about social justice? Stop using plastic. Yeah. Do you care about oil and gas development? You know, stop using plastic. And that's a great plug too for, I use this app. I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but it's called Bycott.
I have heard of it.
Yeah. It's so awesome. For me, I don't know, especially since I'm from Wichita, Kansas, which is home of the Koch brothers, Koch Industries, I have a special interest in boycotting their products. And luckily, it's so easy, because they make products for a disposable life. So Dixie cups, you know, all these things that I'm not using anyway, I'm automatically boycotting. By boycotting non-reusable products, I'm automatically boycotting the unsustainable energy development industries. And so that feels really awesome. It's like, man, I don't have that much to boycott when I go into the store, because I'm already doing it. And, you know, that's something I'll never forget when I read the book. I just finished the book, The Sons of Wichita. And it was like, Charles Koch commented that he liked so-and-so's polyester suit because it was made of petroleum. And I was like, this is so gross. I can't believe that someone is, it's like, what? So anyway, yeah, I totally use that app, and it's fun. You just go around, scan the barcodes, and so if you do want to boycott ExxonMobil, you know, these things, those corporations that make you feel so powerless because they buy lobbyists and all this stuff, you can, with your dollars, vote, and that's what you're doing with, products, plastics, all those things, and it does feel super empowering to...
That's another reason why personal choices do matter. Not just because you are reducing the amount of that particular item in the plastic item in the world, but also because you're taking sales away from a company that's producing it and possibly giving sales to a company that is producing an alternative. So yeah, voting with your dollars is, it's a real thing. The only thing about it is you then also have to let the company know why you did it.
Right.
Right. Because they don't know. They don't know if suddenly people stopped buying their thing just because, you know, it went out of style or it had the wrong flavor or the wrong scent or, you know, whatever. They don't know why unless we tell them why. So that's why it's also really important to keep contacting companies, writing letters to them, letting them know why you're doing what you're doing. Probably sending your own personal message is even more powerful. You know, because you took the time to actually sit down and write something out. It's always, you know, when you get these actions from organizations to write to this person or write to that person, and they have a sample all written out, it's always really important to write your own thing in there and not just stick with their sample, because that will mean a lot more to the people reading it. I mean, you don't have to write a novel, but just, you know, why this issue is important to you.
Totally. So speaking of cathartic, I have two questions that I ask everybody. So this is the fun part. What books do you read?
You know, I really hate to say this, but I haven't had time to read a book in so long. I was an English major in college.
Me too!
I loved reading, and I always would have a book in my hand everywhere I went. And recently, I blame podcasts. This is a podcast.
That's hilarious. Well, then what are some of your favorite podcasts?
I listen to tons of podcasts. So the one that's the most fun for me right now, and this is, honestly, when I listen to podcasts, they never have anything to do with environmental issues. When I am relaxing with a podcast, I want it to be funny and entertaining. So the one that's tickling me right now is the Judge John Hodgman podcast. And as far as books, there is a book that I'm enjoying right now, which is by my meditation teacher, John Burney. And it's called The Unbelievable Happiness of What Is.
Mm.
And I recommend that one too.
Okay.
And that's more for, it can help you slow down and just be in the moment.
The other question that I love to ask is, the podcast is called Sacred Rage for a reason. And so I define sacred rage as just, you know, it's like a superpower. It's, you know, it's like the Nietzsche quote, be careful in casting out your demons lest you remove the best thing from you. And I think that, like, I mean, your website is an act in and of itself of sacred rage. But, mm-hmm. you know, I'll give you an example. Like for me, when I'm like, I'm just feeling so annoyed and angry at, like, whatever, crappy policies and whatnot. I do this thing. I created a video series where I camp with Cardboard Donnie. It's a cardboard cutout of Donald Trump, and I just make these tongue-in-cheek. they're really great. So we explore public lands together. So it's awesome. Like, I mean, he has jumped the border wall down in Mexico. It's insane. So that's like one way. Like, it can be funny. It can be like super direct action. Or sometimes it's like, I just need total silence and to like be in the desert. Like, that's another thing.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So like, what's your sacred rage? Like, how do you express that if you're feeling that, or somebody comes at you with a comment that's like, this is stupid. Like, you can't solve this problem on your own. Or like, who do you think you are? Because I'm sure you've gotten that. Like, how do you, when you feel sacred rage, express that?
I think before expressing it, I want to sit with it and just feel it. Because I think it's really easy to be reactive.
Yeah.
I feel like a puppet.
Right.
You know, like somebody's pulling my strings and I'm letting them do that. So when I feel that rage, first I want to sit with it and find out if it's even real, or if I'm just having a knee-jerk reaction. that somebody else was trying to get me to have, you know?
Right.
So I meditate. I try to like feel the real feelings and get and drop the story about them. I don't really get that rage anymore when somebody leaves a negative comment on my website, which really I don't get that many negative comments, to be honest. But when I do, I recognize that a lot of it you know, that it has more to say about the person leaving the comment than it is about me, because they don't know me. You know, they're and it says more about the way they view the world, the way they see things, and what's true for them rather than what's true about me. Okay, all that said, I'm not a saint, and I do get really pissed off sometimes.
Yeah, or even if maybe you see something, like if you go to the beach and you see a bunch of plastic and trash and stuff like that, not only just personal attacks, but just like, that's, you know, that also can make you feel something not positive.
I'll tell you when I felt real rage, and I felt, but I also felt real helplessness and frustration. And that was going to a natural products conference. Everything was organic and GMO free, fair trade, and everything was packaged in plastic. And I was in the vendor hall. All the vendors were giving out samples with plastic spoons in plastic containers or with, and I just felt, if these people can't get it, if these are the people that can't see that their packaging is part of their product, how am I going to reach all the other ones? And I just felt so overwhelmed, so overwhelmed. I had to leave and take time for myself and then keep going. You know, I talked to lots of people about it that weekend. I talked to each of the vendors about their packaging and listened to what they said and gave them my perspective. I don't have a fun thing like you do with Donald, although I don't know how you could stand looking at that the whole time. Oh my gosh.
I transcend.
That would freak me out so much.
But you're just a person of action. So I feel like, you know, I mean, your website is basically like your act and you just keep going. I mean, it's pretty admirable. Like, this has been a big conversation, you know, that you've been a part of and continue to be a part of.
You know, I've wanted to stop because it's tiring.
Yeah.
But I don't really think I can, to tell you the truth.
Right.
Because I do feel like it's something that I've been given. It's a task that I've been given, and I can't just quit. I can't just quit. Yeah, I can't unknow for sure, and I can't just quit. Although I do, like I said to you when we first started this conversation, I'm really glad for all the media and public awareness and stuff that's going on right now, because it makes me feel like I can back off some and I don't have to spend as much energy on it myself, because other people are picking up the load. Let other people handle the plastic rage.
Totally, totally. But I do think it is super inspirational, especially when you are, you know, just a one person team, that you don't have like staff to support you with all these different, you know, requests from people like me or like random people emailing you, that I think, you know, I think everybody, you can learn something from everybody, and everybody has the power to make a difference. And that's, I think, super inspirational about just your story and your website. And like, man, this woman, she doesn't have like a, you know, a master's degree in petroleum engineering or whatever, but she's spelling it out for you. So like, here it is, you know, I mean, that's, I think, super empowering. And
And also, one thing that I want to mention is that you don't have to be a super extroverted person to speak up and to make a difference, because I'm not at all. You know, I do give presentations and I do interviews and I speak to people and I speak up in stores and stuff like that. But it's an effort. every time because it's not my natural way of being. My natural way of being is to hide in my house, not hide, but, you know, just like to be in my house and just playing with my cats and making food and, you know, being with a couple of friends, but not being a really public person. But when you feel like you're involved in something that's bigger than you, you rise to the challenge and you can surprise yourself. And I want people to know that whatever the thing is that calls to you that's important, you will find whatever resources you need to make a difference. If you just let yourself try, if you just let yourself try something.
That's awesome. I love it. I knew it. I knew you'd be cool. I'm like, this. Yeah, thank you so much for your time. It's awesome to hear everything you're doing, and I can't wait to share it with everybody.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you.
You can find Beth's plethora of resources, including links to her book, her TED Talk, just a mind-bending amount of information by visiting myplasticfreelife.com. Other resources Beth suggested checking out are the plasticpollutioncoalition.org and storyofstuff.org. You've been listening to Sacred Rage. This podcast will always remain free, but if you enjoyed it, please consider becoming a Patreon supporter by visiting patreon.com/sacredragepodcast. Your support and sharing of this podcast means so much because it's just a little old me on this mic. I do it all, the interviewing, the editing, the music ducking. The music today is once again Chimney Choir. Look them up on Spotify or better yet, buy one of their albums. I'd like to close today's episode with Thich Nhat Hanh. Fear, separation, hate, and anger come from the wrong view that you and the earth are two separate entities. The earth is only the environment. You are in the center and you want to do something for the earth for you to survive. That is a dualistic way of seeing. You carry Mother Earth within you. She is not outside of you. Mother Earth is not just your environment. In that insight of interbeing, it is possible to have real communication with the earth, which is the highest form of prayer. We'll see y'all next time. Thanks for listening.